at the cross, as we are preparing our minds and our hearts towards the communion table, which we will be taking in a few moments down the road here. I actually wanted to start out by having a little bit of fun this morning, and actually this is going to require some help. So Pastor Anders has gone and found a few individuals. So if Pastor Anders has talked to you, I need you to come on up here, those of you who he has talked to. And if there's a couple, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All right, I need 6 more. Are there other youth that walked in here? Youth, any youth that I don't, or are too embarrassed to come up? All right. All right, then I need about 6 more people. 6 more. You look like a great person to help. Come on up. You can join in. Come on up here. All right. All right. David, do you want to come up and help us out? We could use your help. Okay, how many of you got here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I need 3 more. There we go. Perfect. 2 more. Veda, I see your hand up. You're good to go. All right. All right. One of you guys want to come up? Oh, we got it. We got 2 of them right here. Okay, I think we got them then. All right, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Perfect. All right, we got 13. I'm going to give you that one. You get to be Jesus, all right? And we're just going to go down the line. Don't worry if you're a lady, but you have a guy's name. It's okay. It works well. Oh, only give you one. All right. Anybody know who these people are? That's right. You guys are the disciples, right? You guys are the different disciples that are in there. And here you guys go. There you are right there. All right. So we're talking about communion, right? So Jesus is kind of the guy who's heading this up, right? So Jesus, where, if you were to set up the table, where would you be? So we're going to imagine that this is kind of the table up in here somewhere. Where would you put yourself? Close to the middle. Okay, go ahead and put yourself right in the middle then, if that's where you're going to, right about there. All right. Then let's kind of do this. How's about the rest of you kind of fill in how you think the table would look? So just quickly step in line or however you think the table would be. You know, if you want to be close to Jesus, if you think you're like his close friend, just make your way in there. There we go. Perfect. Thomas has got it. All right. Now, okay. So one of the things we see, here I'll move this out of the way, we don't have a crooked table. But a lot of times if you're looking at the communion, the table, the Last Supper, where do we get our mindset of how the table was set up? Anybody know? There's a picture, right? Like Da Vinci, he did this really cool in the Last Supper. And what it is, we have in that, we have the picture, and Jesus is right in the center. And actually in there, there's another guy sitting kind of leaning against. So if you want to lean against Jesus, okay, there you go. You know, then Thomas, you always kind of have a weird look on your face with that. And then where's Judas Iscariot? You just kind of glare at Jesus, right? So you're just kind of glaring. All right, so that's kind of the picture that we have, right, of the Last Supper. Now, what's interesting is this is not likely what it was like. As a matter of fact, a few years back I was in Israel. We were on a trip, and our guide said, you know what? What everybody thinks is this is what the table looked like. It was this long, straight table. Does anybody in their home set up a long, straight table and everybody sit on one side? Okay. Now, the interesting part of it, what they would do in that time was what was called a triclinium, or a U-shape, okay? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take, like, the 3 of you on the end, and I want you to just kind of step this way, make a line that. The 3 on the far end, you're also going to do the same thing, okay? So this is likely about what it would look like. Understand that the second thing is, they didn't sit at the table. Now, I'm not going to ask you guys to do this, but it says that they reclined at the table. So usually what happened is they would be laying down. Don't do that. You guys can stay standing. But they would be laying down with their feet out the back. And that would explain why in the story, when the woman comes in and anoints Jesus' feet, that it says that she stood behind him and anointed his feet with her tears. His feet would have been sticking out. Now, here's the other part of it. We think that Jesus would be standing in the middle or sitting in the middle. As a matter of fact, that's not where Jesus was likely standing. As a matter of fact, I want Jesus, you come over here and trade places with Veda. All right? Okay. So you're actually in the second spot right here. So Zephyr, you'll walk over this way. There we go. Now this is interesting. Imagining that that door over there is the entrance into the upper room, the host of it, who would have been Jesus in this situation, would have been sitting in the second spot on the opposite side of the entrance. Okay? Now, this is one of the things that they say is a possibility. Now, I have a question for you. Who would have been to Jesus' right? Do we have any idea who would have been sitting to the right of Jesus? Peter, John, let's go. We got 12 of them. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we could see is John. Where's John? John, you come over here. Now you switch places. You go over there. John sits right here. Why would we say that John would be on the right? Anybody have any idea? Because one of the things that we read in the book of John is that when they were reclining at the table, if you remember, Jesus makes a statement about somebody betraying him. And it says that the one disciple whom Jesus loved was leaning in against Jesus. Now, why would we say the right side and not the left side? Because historically what they would do is as they would recline on their left arm so that they could eat with their right arm. They were lefty intolerant in those days, all right? It wasn't very good for us lefties. But so therefore, we see that John was likely sitting to the right of Jesus. Who would have been to the left of Jesus? I hear Peter, I hear others. As a matter of fact, Judas, why don't you guys switch places? So Judas, come on over here. Judas Iscariot. How do we know that? Oh, do we not have his? Oh, Judas Iscariot. So over there, you're going to switch with there. Yeah, not Iscariot was a good guy. All right. How do we know Judas Iscariot was sitting here? Because it says, Jesus says, the one whom I dip my hand in the bowl with is the one who will betray me. Well, if John is on the right, then Judas must have been on the left, and there was a dipping bowl that they would dip whatever their food was in, a broth type thing, and they had to have been close. So here we see we've got these three lined up, all right? Now, there's one more place that we go, we might know where the individual was at. And who do you think that was? Peter? I'm hearing Peter. Where would Peter be? Next to John? You think Peter would be next to John? As a matter of fact, some have claimed that Peter might have been on the last spot where Simon is standing right now. So those two will switch. How would they say that? Now, this is speculation, a lot of speculation here, but the reason why they would say that is because in the story of the Last Supper, when Jesus leaves the table and he goes and starts washing their feet, there's one disciple who doesn't like the fact that Jesus was washing his feet, and that was Peter, right? Now, it's interesting because it doesn't say Jesus didn't go to Peter first. As a matter of fact, Scripture says that after he had washed other disciples' feet, he came to Peter, and Peter said, no, you cannot wash my feet. Now, what would be the significance of that? That seat on the end was the lowest seat possible. All right? That would be the person, which is interesting because Peter was often the spokesperson, right? But that person also came with a job. Since they were the person that was closest to the door, they were at the end of the table, they were usually the person that was responsible for the washing of the feet. They were the one that would basically have to either do the washing or they would have to find the person to do the washing. So that's why some people have said they think that Peter is there. Another reason why they say Peter is there is because when Jesus says that someone is going to dip their hand in the sauce with me, in the bowl with me, that person will betray me. And it says that in that moment, Peter catches John's eye and makes a gesture or says, find out who it is. And you could see if they're sitting in this kind of a U-shaped, that would be a perfect way for Peter to make that contact. All right? Now, here's the other part of the rest of this. The table was often set up on the level of importance. These two spots were the places of honor. The right and the left were the two highest guests of honor places. And then the table went in succession from there. So, do you guys like where you're at? If it's going from highest to lowest, are you guys okay with that? You see a problem where this could come in? As a matter of fact, we read that a problem does come in. Right after communion, as they're sitting there, you know what happens in this group right here? All of these great-looking young disciples who love Jesus, doing everything. You know what they do? They get into an argument. You know what the argument was over? Which one of us is the greatest? Right? Yeah. After communion, after Jesus washes their feet, after all of that, and all of a sudden, here they are going, who's the greatest in this room? You see how easily people can get to the place where humility is lost, especially in a situation like this, because you want to be close to the host, you want to sit in the places of honor, but you don't want to be near the end. But humility would say otherwise. So thanks, guys. You know, as a consolation prize, you can keep your papers with you, you know, if you want. Give them a hand for being such good. Now, why would we do that? The desire is this morning, as we bring ourselves to this communion time, a lot of times maybe we come with the same idea that the disciples do. I deserve this. But really, by the time that we're done, the idea that I want us to feel is simply this: am I thankful to just be at the table? To be invited to the table that Jesus has invited us to. I want you to turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 14. And we're going to read this story of Jesus when he's in a home of a Pharisee. And we're going to talk about humility at the table. Luke chapter 14, starting at verse 1. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. There in front of him was a man suffering from abnormal swelling in his body. And Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts in the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. Then he asked them, "If any of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" And they had nothing to say. And when he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table, he told them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor. For a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, "Give this person your seat." Then, humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. But when you're invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, "Friend, move up to a better place." Then you will be honored in the presence of all the other guests. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Then Jesus said to his host, "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives or rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." We live in a time where everything is about me, right? Do what you want. Do what feels good. Don't let anybody rain on your parade. If they do, you know, I mean, we like to think that we should be the number one. That's what we're told. Jesus is in this, and he is the master room reader. I would have loved to have been sitting there in a lot of these stories with Jesus, because here he is in the room and he's noticing how people are coming into this banquet time, and he sees that, you know, the person will walk in and they'll kind of look in at the seating and everything, and they'll move themselves to the higher places of honor. They'll go and sit closer to the host. They will make themselves be someone higher than what they are. And Jesus says, you know what, this is a great time to have a little bit of a lesson on humility. He says, you know what? Humility starts with not honoring yourself. You see, it's not about you. I love it. He goes, you know, when you come into this place, don't assume that you are supposed to be the one sitting at the head of the table. Don't assume that you're the one that should be sitting to the left or the right of the host of this place. He goes, because that would be really embarrassing. You remember how many of you growing up, you had huge family gatherings, huge meals, like holidays and stuff like that, you know, multiple tables. You remember everybody from the family would come together, and you had the adult table and you had the kids table. Okay, you know the kids table. Remember being at that kids table and you're like, oh man, I'm at the kids table. And the whole idea was you couldn't wait for the day when all of a sudden you could be sitting at the adult table, and a year came and you felt that you were, I'm an adult now. Remember that day? And you thought, I'm going to get at the adult table this year. And you go to the table and you sat down there before anybody else was, and you're like, I'm going to be at the adult table. And what happened? Mom comes in and goes, what are you doing sitting there? Get back to the kids' table. It might have happened, all right? I mean, it. And all of a sudden, you're doing the walk of shame back to the kids' table. And you're the oldest one at the kids' table as they're sitting there, you know, and you're back to your plastic plate and sippy cup, and they're having, you know. It was a tough day. But that's what Jesus was saying. He's like, look, whatever you do, don't sit there and assume that you deserve the biggest place of honor. There's a story that we find in Matthew chapter 20, verses 20 through 24, a very audacious request, I would say. It says, the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons and, kneeling down, asked a favor of him. What is it you want? He asked. She said, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said to them. Can you drink the cup I am going to drink? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or my left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father. When the 10 heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. Again, this is one of those times where I would have loved to have been there. Because here's this mom coming up. He's like, okay, boys, we're gonna go talk to Jesus here. And then pulls Jesus aside and says, Jesus, would you make my two sons the two biggest, most important people in your kingdom? That's what she was asking. This wasn't a, hey, you know what, my sons like you, they want to be near you kind of thing. This was an importance thing. I want my sons. And Jesus goes, you can't drink my cup. I like their response. Well, sure we can, especially if we're sitting on your right and your left. It's going to be right there. No, you don't get it. This isn't something that you earn, you deserve. It's not something like that. He says, this is a place that is prepared. But then I love this part. When the 10 heard about it, it says they were indignant. Do you know why they were indignant? Because they wanted those two places. It was a scenario that they were like, we got beat to the punch. We wanted that. We knew it was not a good thing to ask. So they were all mad at the two brothers, James and John, and they're like, this shouldn't work. And as a matter of fact, we see that this continues on because, as I shared a moment ago, in Luke chapter 22, verses 24, they're in the upper room. Jesus has washed their feet. They have gone through the whole communion meal where Jesus tells them he's going to die and he's going to come back from the dead. And then it says a dispute arose among them as to which of them was the greatest. This was a problem that had been going on with the disciples for some time. They lived, their thought is always, it's about me, what is my importance, where am I? And they tried to honor themselves. Humility does not honor self. Humility is thankful to be at the table. Another thing that we see in the text of the morning is that not only is it not about us, but humility lets others honor you. Jesus in the story, that's what he says. He goes, you know, when you come into a place, don't sit at the head of the table because you might have that embarrassing moment where we saw it up here. It's like, well, actually, you weren't the person. You need to go stand over there. You might get moved down, and that would be really embarrassing in front of everybody else. He says, however, when you come in, take a place of low esteem. Sit at the end. You know what? Sit here where the servant is, or the lowest person, and be elevated by the host. Have the host come to you and say, here's a place for you. One of the things as a pastor that I get to do is I get to officiate weddings. And it was interesting that we were doing a wedding, and the truth was most of the people in the wedding, we didn't know. And so when it came the time, we were invited to the reception, and we walk into the reception, and there was no place. It was go sit where you want. Just find a place to sit. And that's hard when you don't know anyone, because you're like, well, where am I supposed to sit? So you automatically start looking for where's the corner where we can disappear, right? That's kind of the thought with that. You know, we knew, well, the head table. Pastor never sits at the head table, all right? It just doesn't happen. Don't even go up there. That would be embarrassing. Then there's other tables that you know are for family and close friends. You don't want to go there either. So we were kind of wandering around trying to find out where were the people that didn't know, the wedding crashers, basically, where the wedding crashers sit. And as we're looking for the spot, the father of the bride walks up to us and says, oh, wait, no. You guys are at our table. And we got brought to the parents' table, the second table. You know, you got the main table, but then you got the parents' table, parents and grandparents, and we got to sit with them. What an honor that was to be able to be with them and to have that experience of being elevated to that place. And that's what Jesus says. You know what? In humility, let others elevate you. In Proverbs 18:12, we read these words, before a downfall, the heart is haughty, but humility comes before honor. I love the Proverbs because they really do make it very clear in the sense of, you know what, if it's all about you, eventually it's not going to work out well. But if you live in humility, honor often is a result of humility in a person's life. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 and 6, we read something that is really very applicable to today. It says, in the same way, you who are younger, submit yourselves to your elders. All of you clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, because God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. This is a great truth for us to get to, because as I said earlier, we live in a generation where we're being told that it really is all about you. You know what? If it makes you happy, do it. If anybody tells you that you can't, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that has become very popular on Facebook that I've seen kind of repeated time and time again is a statement along the lines of, if there are those who don't help you to feel happy about yourself, remove them from your life. They're not worth it. You're worth it. They're not worth it. And there's all of these statements that come along this point of, if you don't get what you want, if they don't agree with you, if they don't side with you, whatever it is, then just move them out and do what you want because you are the one primary thing that you need to focus on. And the interesting thing about that is actually Scripture tells us quite the opposite. In Proverbs 29:23, it says, "Pride brings a person low, but the lowly spirit gains honor." See, when I strive to be honored, those are often the times where honor is not found. But when in humility we decide that, you know what, we're gonna just not put ourselves out front. We're not going to be the best. Then honor comes in those moments. Humility allows others to honor us. However, there's one more, and actually I would almost venture to say that I probably could have switched these around. But humility honors others. Humility honors others above ourselves. So really, when we think about this, the idea is, do I live my life in such a way to elevate others in my life? In the text of this morning, Jesus actually gives a little bit of advice. He says, okay, here's the deal. When you plan to throw a banquet, invite the people who can't pay you back. Invite the people who will not reciprocate this to you. Give honor to somebody who has no way of honoring you back in the same way. Bring them into that place. You know, I started thinking about that, and I went, wow, that's really not what we do, is it? Think about a party that you've thrown. Who do you invite to a big party that you're gonna have? People you know, right? People who you love, people who you respect. You know, a few years back, we had the joy of putting together our own wedding reception. And, you know, all of the work getting invitations out and, you know, trying to determine who are we going to invite to the reception, right? It was hard. Well, actually, I listened most of the time. The ladies had to deal with it most of the time. You know, I threw in my two cents, like, well, I suppose grandma and grandpa should be there and, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, you all of a sudden you're going down this list and you're going, what's the criteria for which we're going to let somebody come to, we're going to invite them to the reception? You know, and obviously the first requirement was, do we even like these people? You're not going to invite somebody you don't like, right? So you're like, okay, they checked that box. We like them. Are they close to us? Are they close family? Are they close friends? Are they somebody who has made an impact on our lives? If they're somebody who slighted us, they're not on that thing. You know, if you don't hardly know them, there's criteria what you do. And the interesting thing is it becomes this thing of, oh, well, they did this. We need to do this. Or, you know, it's kind of this balancing act, isn't it? When you invite, and that's what Jesus said. He goes, don't invite those who are just going to keep this balancing act going back and forth. Oh, they invited us to their party, so I guess we need to invite them to our party. And you know what? They made us feel really, really good when we were there, so we better do the same thing. He says, don't plan your banquets that way. As a matter of fact, honor those who can't honor you back. Honor those who don't expect you to honor them. Paul says in Romans 12, verses 9 and 10, it says, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Now listen to what he says. Honor one another above yourself. Man, that's hard. Honoring someone above myself, in theory, it sounds good, doesn't it? Oh yeah, we should do that. We should honor everybody above ourselves, and that's the good Christian thing to do. But it's hard to do. Because we're constantly being told that, no, you need to be honored. You need to be the one that is elevated. Paul in Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, look at what he says. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of the others. Don't make it about you. It's not about you. Make it about them. How can you elevate somebody else? How can you honor somebody else? It should be our highest priorities as disciples of Jesus Christ who have been invited to the table to not be in the place of honor, but to elevate everybody else in that honor in our lives. Am I living my life to place other people higher than myself? Humility does not honor self. Humility allows others to honor them. Humility honors others above themselves. You know what? Humility says, I am so thankful that I have just been invited to the table. It would kind of change things a little bit, wouldn't it be, if Jesus were to come to you and say, I'm inviting you to the table, and we're sitting at the kids' table. Where would you want to sit then? You just want to sit where Jesus is at, right? You see, when we come to this time of communion, that is exactly what this is. Jesus has invited us to the table. And he is saying, you know what, there's not a place here, there's not a location, there's not a higher honor above anyone else. It doesn't matter, but here's the truth. You've been invited to the table. And he says there's only one criteria to be at the table. And that criteria is simply this, that you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That you have made him the Lord and Savior of your life. And he says, you know what? And if you've done that, you're invited to the table.